Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 26th of July, 2014. My name's Hereward Fenton, and a very warm welcome to everyone around the world and to our listeners in Austin, Texas, on the FM networks. It is a great pleasure to have your company today. In today's two-hour show, we are going to be focusing largely on the Israel-Gaza conflict. We will be covering a number of topics which are somewhat difficult, somewhat obscured by disinformation. But I'm determined in today's show to try to make some progress in unraveling some of the deceptions that have built up over the years in regard to this tragic situation that we see in Gaza. Now, in the second hour of today's show, my guest is Max Egan, Australian broadcaster, who has been doing incredible work to help the Palestinian cause. Max has been to Gaza. He entered Gaza illegally and did some filming there and was eventually kicked out, but he has some interesting stories to tell about his time in Gaza. Max Egan broadcasts on some American networks, and many of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with his work. Today's second hour will be largely a discussion with Max about what he understands of the situation there, his experiences, and his overview of the whole conflict, which he describes as ethnic cleansing. He describes as really not so much a conflict as oppression, tyranny, and occupation. And I certainly would largely concur with that. I mean, it is so disproportionate that to talk of a conflict implies that there is some sort of parity between the two sides, when in fact the one side is just the military-industrial complex of the United States, essentially crushing a tiny state that is armed with weapons that are incapable of actually doing any real damage. And this is one of the problems with describing the situation as a conflict or a war situation. In the first hour of the show, I want to explore the nature of Hamas and Israel, of the connection between Hamas and Israel. I want to look into who really is Hamas. And I've raised this on previous shows, but I want to return to explore the concept that Hamas is largely a creation or a tool of Israel. And in saying that, I'm not wanting to undermine real Palestinian resistance. I'm not wanting to put a slur on the genuineness of many people who probably are working within Hamas. But in today's world, we have to understand that political movements in times like these are continually subject to undermining and manipulation, and that there are very, very clever people, puppet masters, elites, engineering situations, engineering conflicts, and they use all kinds of incentives and all kinds of techniques to do that. We need to return to the concept of the false flag. We need to look at all the deceptions that are being used in this Palestine-Israel conflict and not let that out of our sight. We have to keep our focus on that, because that, honestly, folks, I believe is the only way you're going to achieve sanity on this subject. If you start to gravitate towards the propaganda or the rhetoric of of either side of the debate as it's put forward by their proponents, I believe you're falling into the patterns of deception and propaganda. Because the people who are set up to be leaders in these situations are almost universally agents. They are not who they claim to be. The grassroots, the foot soldiers, the people in the street, they will be genuine, they always are. But the people who rise up into positions of leadership, one has to be incredibly skeptical and apply a lot of critical thinking to understand who these people really are and how they got into the positions of power that they did. So we will be looking into all of that in the first hour. And I want to begin with a speech that was made by Ron Paul back in 2009. And this is on the subject of Hamas and Israel. And this was made in the House of Representatives in the United States. Here we go.
Madam Speaker, I rise in opposition to this resolution, not because I am taking sides and picking who the bad guys are and who the good guys are, but I'm looking at this more from the angle of being a United States citizen, an American. And I think resolutions like this really do us great harm. In many ways, what's happening in the Middle East, and in particular with Gaza right now, we have some moral responsibility for both sides in a way, because we provide help and funding for both Arab nations and Israel. And so we definitely have a moral responsibility, and especially now today, the weapons being used to kill so many Palestinians are American weapons, and American funds essentially are being used for this. But there's a political liability which I think is something that we fail to look at, because too often there's so much blowback from our intervention in areas that we shouldn't be involved in. You know, Hamas, if you look at the history, you'll find out that Hamas was encouraged and really started by Israel, because they wanted Hamas to counteract Yasser Arafat. And you say, well, yeah, that was better then and served its purpose, but we didn't want Hamas to do this. So then we as Americans say, well, we have such a good system, we're going to impose this on the world. We're going to invade Iraq and teach people how to be Democrats. We want free elections. So we encourage the Palestinians to have a free election. They do, and they elect Hamas. So we first, indirectly and directly through Israel, help establish Hamas. Then we have election. Then Hamas becomes dominant, so we have to kill them. You know, it just doesn't make sense. During the 80s, you know, we were allied with Osama bin Laden. And we were contending with the Soviets. It was at that time our CIA thought it was good if we radicalized the Muslim world. So we financed the madrasa schools to radicalize the Muslims in order to compete with the Soviets. There's too much blowback. There's a lot of reasons why we should oppose this resolution. It is not in the interest of the United States. It's not in the interest of Israel either.
Okay, that summary there from Ron Paul about Hamas having been set up to counteract the PLO, this was actually stated by Yasser Arafat, the former leader of the PLO and the Fatah movement, who, of course, died under very suspicious circumstances. But let me read to you now a quote from Yasser Arafat from 2001. On December 19, 2001, in an interview with L'Espresso, Arafat said, "Hamas was constituted with the support of Israel. The aim was to create an organization antagonistic to the PLO. They received financing and training from Israel. They have continued to benefit from permits and authorizations, while we have been limited even to build a tomato factory. Rabin himself defined it as a fatal error. Some collaborationists of Israel are involved in these terrorist attacks. We have the proof, and we are placing it at the disposal of the Italian government. Let me just read to you that last statement again. Some collaborationists of Israel are involved in these terrorist attacks. We have the proof, and we are placing it at the disposal of the Italian government. Folks, this is the great open secret of the Israel-Palestine conflict. And it's not the least bit surprising, and it should be something that is discussed often in the media, and there should be numerous investigative journalists writing on this topic of the engineering of control through false flags, divide and conquer techniques, and through creating the enemy that you need to have in order to maintain and expand your empire. Not to talk about this is itself a crime. The Western media, in ignoring this fact, is committing a crime. And I want to do my part today to try and redress that. We have to understand that the people living in Gaza are living under such difficult circumstances, and their lives are so circumscribed and so difficult that it is very, very difficult for them to be able to sit back and reflect and to kind of do the thinking that we can do in the comfort of our, you know, peaceful environment. So there's an important service that we need to provide to these people to help them to understand. Because I believe that the Palestinians, the citizens of Gaza, need to understand that they are being manipulated and used just like everywhere else in the world. They are being manipulated and used by the people who purport to be their representatives. And in this case, I'm actually talking about Hamas. I'm not talking, as I said, about all of Hamas. I'm talking about the leaders of Hamas. I'm talking about the connection at the highest level between those leaders, those terrorist leaders, and the powers that be in the government of Israel. And to provide an analogy to that, in the conflict in Northern Ireland, the key leaders of the IRA, it is now known, were being controlled and handled by MI5. It hardly ever gets talked about, but that was the case then. We're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Important show coming up.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Great to be with you today. And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to know more about our show, if you're listening to this show on the radio broadcast in Austin, please check out our website,
And we've got a lot of material there going back several years. And if you really like what we do, can I encourage you to become a subscriber? We recently started our subscription service, which you can simply join. You use your credit card and you can become a yearly or a monthly subscriber. Those who become yearly subscribers will get our lovely TNRA t-shirt and a resource DVD, which we'll mail out to you. Of course, in the US, it will cost a little extra to have that mailed to you. We haven't actually had any subscribers from the US yet, but I'm still hopeful. And let me just emphasize the importance of becoming a subscriber. Shows like this, unless they have support from listeners, are fully paid for, funded by usually one or two people, in this case one person, myself, which I've been doing for many years now. And it's brought pretty serious hardship to me doing that. I don't regret it at all, and I'm not going to stop. But the money, folks, money is essential in order to develop a service, and this is a service. So without the money, it remains very limited. It remains less professional than it could be. It can't reach as many people as it ought to. And, you know, that's a pity, isn't it? I mean, let's look at it from the perspective of the free market. This is a service that is providing something to you that is sorely lacking in the marketplace of mainstream news. So there should be a market for what I'm doing here, and I know I've had support from a lot of listeners, and they've said they like the show. Of course, if you don't like the show, if you don't like the product, then certainly don't pay for it. I mean, if there's a restaurant in your street that serves lousy food, don't go there. But, you know, if it's a good restaurant and you go there, well, you generally pay for the food. Of course, the difference with internet material is that because of the way it's served up, it's very difficult to have a situation where you actually have to pay to get it. I mean, let's just compare it to, say, walking into a restaurant where, you know, you kind of go into the restaurant, you sit down, they bring you the food, and then you pay. Now, of course, you could just get up at the end of the meal and say, well, I'm not paying for that, you know, and you could walk out. People don't generally do that. It's generally regarded as being rather rude, if not actually against the law. Although there is some grey area there as to whether that is against the law. But, you know, technically it's morally wrong. And similarly, and I'm certainly not wanting to judge anyone here, but because I haven't actually asked for money for many years, but when the menu actually has a price on it and you've come into the restaurant and sat down, there is an obligation to understand that that is a service that is being provided at a cost. And in order for the service to be provided, money has to be paid. It's that simple. Anyway, I hope you can understand that analogy. But again, we provide the service here for everyone, even those who can't pay. And for those who can't pay, I guarantee you, you're under no pressure. For those who can pay, if you can afford a concession subscription at $35, that would be terrific. If you can afford a full subscription at $65, that would be ideal. And I'm looking to get 500 subscribers to this show so that I can actually support myself, albeit at a minimal level, and maybe actually improve some of the features of the show. So I'll leave that with you to think about as we move on with the rest of today's stories. Now, I want to continue today talking about the roots of Hamas in Israel. But before I do that, I want to play to you a clip from an interview that Max Egan did just yesterday with a lady in Gaza, because it's quite moving, it's quite disturbing. And I will be talking to Max Egan, well-known broadcaster and internet citizen journalist. I'll be talking to him in the second hour for the full hour. And do stay tuned for that, because it's going to be a really interesting hour. But I would like to play to you now a brief interview that Max did yesterday with a lady in Gaza talking about the extreme level
of hardship, the extreme actions that are being taken by the Israeli Defense Forces.
We are so concerned about you. What are the soldiers doing? Is there any leeway at all? Are they giving any quarter to the civilians? Is it just civilian targets all the time?
Yeah, it is civilians, of children all the time. They are targeting children. This is what is happening. Seriously, like when I go to the hospital, it's mostly children and women whom I see arriving to the hospital killed and injured. It's unbelievable, I swear. Like, and they're going crazy. Like, they're shilling randomly, attacking whole buildings, randomly, without warning, without anything. Like, I never seen something like that. Not even back in 2008, not in 2012. This is much worse. Much worse.
Yeah, it's like they are retaking the whole Gaza Strip. They are saying that Hamas are using people in Gaza as human shields. Is this true?
No, this is not true. This is just a lie that the Israeli media and the Israeli politicians are using to justify their crimes.
This is what's happening. This is what I've been telling people. This is what I've been telling people from the very start.
Yeah, it's a lie. They just use it to make people justify the killing of the civilians and the killing of the children. This is not true. And people should a little bit open up and understand what's going on the other side and hear the other side, except just believing what they're hearing in their media.
Yeah, it's like ethnic cleansing. It's like they're ethnically cleansing. They're just killing all the Palestinians.
It is. Seriously, it is. You brought me the best words to explain what is happening.
Yeah, I've been spreading the media. I've been saturating social media, Noor. I've been awake for 20 days trying to wake the world up to this. A lot of people are screaming out for Gaza. A lot of protests all around the world, darling. We are working so hard to get Israel to stop. And as soon as it stops, I will be straight in there with a team of people. A lot of people will be in there with teams. We're waiting to go in right now.
That's great. You know, I think, I don't know, but how about like launching a campaign from your side or something, I don't know, telling people to do email politicians back there or call embassies, I don't know, because seriously, like, we are shocked that no government is standing by us. Not even the Arabs are standing by us. It's horrific. I swear, Max. We're like shocked.
I know, darling. You know, I know. The whole world is shocked, Noor. The whole world is shocked at what is going on. And we will not stop fighting.
That guy, Ban Ki-moon, working with the UN is unbelievable.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
I'll just leave it there. That interview there was conducted yesterday in Gaza. Full-on ethnic cleansing going on. Now, the death toll today, as reported by the ABC, is over 800. I think 850. Yeah, that's the current. But, you know, that'll change. By the time you're listening to this, it'll be probably over 1,000. The situation, it's becoming more indiscriminate. It's becoming more brazen. The lack of any condemnation, the lack of any restraint being put on Israel is allowing them to just kind of go nuts. And, of course, the rain of little toy rockets landing in Israel is largely what allows that to happen. And I'll be returning to that when we come back from the break, because those little toy rockets... And, of course, the Iron Dome. We're going to deconstruct all of that when we come back from break with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Herewood Fenton. It's great to be with you today. Today we're talking about the situation in Gaza. We're talking about the Israel-Palestine conflict. And I'm particularly focusing today on the concept of Hamas as a creation of Israel. Some might say a proxy of Israel. Some might say a false flag initiator of Israel's predefined agenda. I'm going to play to you now from a news clip which was apparently broadcast on an Israeli news network. Now, if anything I'm saying today that if anything I'm saying is not factually correct, I do hope that you get in touch with me, let me know your opinion, and I'll certainly revise anything I've said if you can substantiate it. But I'm turning to a number of sources here that I've found through searching and Googling, and I'm simply sharing what I have found with the audience. So let's play here this news clip from an Israel news TV network.
The son of Hamas founder Sheikh Hassan Youssef once served as an extremely valuable and effective intelligence agent for Israel's Shin Bet security service. This according to an exclusive report in the Haaretz newspaper. More in this report.
Haaretz today reported that Musab Hassan Youssef joined the Shin Bet security service in 1996. He is credited with saving countless lives by providing pinpoint intelligence that prevented dozens of suicide bombings and assassinations of political leaders in Israel. Youssef is the son of Sheikh Hassan Youssef, an influential West Bank figure who is one of the key founders of the militant Hamas terror organization. News of Youssef's son's employment as a Shin Bet agent will be another blow to the terror organization on the heels of the January assassination of top Hamas commander Mahmoud al-Mabhouh. Haaretz reported that information provided by Youssef's son Musab was so valued that he was nicknamed the Green Prince. One of his Shin Bet colleagues told the paper that Youssef deserves Israel's security prize for his contribution in preventing terrorism. According to Haaretz, Musab Youssef supplied near daily key intelligence that exposed a number of terror cells from his father's Hamas organization and led to the arrests of many Palestinian terrorists on Israel's most wanted list, including Fatah Tanzim leader Marwan Barghouti. The son of the Hamas founder fled the West Bank in 2007 after he created a firestorm of criticism by converting to Christianity from Islam. He said he wished he was still in Gaza so that he could join special forces to liberate abducted IDF soldier Gilad Shalit in order to eliminate the need to release Palestinian prisoners he helped put behind bars. He told the paper in a telephone interview that we wasted so many years with investigations and arrests to capture the very terrorists that they now want to release in return for Shalit. Youssef today lives in California and is currently publishing a memoir about his ordeal entitled Son of Hamas. The Shin Bet has made no comment. This is
okay. Well, there's an interesting piece of information for you to consider, that the son of the founder of Hamas was working for Israel and is now living in California. That was from 4 years ago. There are a number of sources, a number of angles on this. There are many different sources that tell me that Hamas is a creation of Israel. So when you're getting the information from different places and it's coinciding, then you give it more value. I'm not wanting this to be the case. It's not that I need to believe that. It's simply that there are so many indicators of that. And we saw the quote there from Yasser Arafat himself, and also indicating that Israel was behind some of the Hamas terror attacks. I mean, incredibly important accusations that deserve to be aired and known. Let me read to you now from an article that was published in 2002 by LaRouchePublishing.com. Israeli roots of Hamas are being exposed.
Speaking in Jerusalem on December 20, this is 2002, U.S. Ambassador to Israel Daniel Kurtzer made the connection between the growth of the Islamic fundamentalist groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad and Israel's promotion of the Islamic movement as a counter to the Palestinian nationalist movement. Kurtz's comments come very close to EIR's own presentation of the evidence of Israel's instrumental role in establishing Hamas and its ongoing control of that organization. Kurtzer said that the growth of the Islamic movement in the Palestinian territories in recent decades, with the tacit support of Israel, was not totally unrelated to the emergence of Hamas and Islamic Jihad and their terrorist attacks against Israel. Kurtzer explained that during the 1980s, when the Islamic movement began to flourish in the West Bank and Gaza, Israel perceived it to be better to have people turning toward religion rather than toward a nationalistic cause. It therefore did little to stop the flow of money to mosques and other religious institutions rather than to schools. According to the December 21 Israel Daily Haaretz, Kurtzer made these extraordinary statements at a seminar on religion and politics sponsored by Oz V'Shalom Netivot Shalom, a largely Anglo-American organization that promotes peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Lichtenstein, who is an active advocate of a just regional peace, also spoke. Kurtzer said that as a result of the growth of Islam at the expense of education, there are now Palestinians who are determined terrorists that use religious beliefs in a perverted way to appeal to the masses. Kurtzer said that cultural and religious interaction is potentially a way to build bridges, but instead the perverted use of religion in the region is today becoming one of the great challenges for the years ahead. He also said there is no inherent component in Islam that advocates violence. But one of the five principles of Islam, jihad, or resistance, in classic religious associations, connotes religious belief and fervor, not violence. But extremists have distorted the meaning of jihad, so it now has a connotation of violence in the service of a religious purpose. This statement is extraordinary given the fact that Kurtzer is a very senior diplomat, having held the post of ambassador to Egypt just prior to going to Tel Aviv. He is also an Orthodox Jew who is not shy of criticizing the extreme anti-Israel and anti-Semitic views held by certain Arab circles. The ambassador's comments are an acknowledgement of what any serious Middle Eastern observer knows. Hamas has always been seen as a tool by which Israel could undermine the nationalist movement led by Palestinian Authority President and Palestine Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat. Similar statements by Arafat have been dismissed by Israel as cranky propaganda. In an interview on December 11, 2001, with an Italian daily, Arafat said, "We are doing everything to stop the violence, but Hamas is a creature of Israel," which at the time of Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir gave them money and more than 700 institutions, among them schools, universities, and mosques. Rabin ended up admitting it when I charged him with it in the presence of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. So, once again, another quote there from Yasser Arafat. And remember, folks, Yasser Arafat's death is highly contentious. There wasn't a forensic investigation, and I have to return to that and have a look at the information from that, because his family believes that he was murdered. And an investigation was opened up with a forensic researcher to determine whether he was actually poisoned. We're going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back with one more segment in this hour. And in hour two, we'll be joined by Max Egan. So stay with us for the next hour. Back with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking today about Gaza and Israel, and just before the break there, I was reading some quotes from Yasser Arafat about Hamas, about the connections between Hamas and Israel, and of course I raised the point that his death is disputed, and this is something that hasn't really been widely covered. There have been two investigations into the possibility that he may have been poisoned with radioactive materials. One was done by French investigators, the other was done by Russians. I've got an article here from the Huffington Post, 26th of November 2013. The Yasser Arafat death investigation. Palestinian leader did not die from radioactive poisoning, Russian scientists say. A Russian probe into the death of Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has found no trace of radioactive poisoning, the chief of the government agency that conducted the study said on Thursday. Vladimir Weber, the head of the Federal Medical and Biological Agency, said the agency had no plans to conduct further tests. It was a natural death. There was no impact of radiation. Teams of scientists from France, Switzerland, and Russia were asked to determine whether polonium, a rare and extremely lethal substance, played a part in Arafat's death in a French military hospital in 2004. Palestinians have long suspected Israel of poisoning him, which Israel denies. Russia, meanwhile, has had close ties with Palestinian authorities since Soviet times, when Moscow supported their struggle. After a 2012 report, which said traces of radioactive polonium were found on Arafat's clothing, his widow, Suha Arafat, filed a legal complaint in France, seeking an investigation into whether he was murdered. As part of that probe, French investigators had Arafat's remains exhumed and ordered a series of tests on them. Suha Arafat, who was notified of the findings earlier this month, along with her lawyers, said that the French experts found traces of polonium, but came to different conclusions than the Swiss about where they came from, finding that it was of natural environmental origin. Polonium occurs naturally in very low concentrations in the Earth's crust, and also is produced artificially in nuclear reactors. Swiss scientists, meanwhile, said they found elevated traces of polonium-210 and lead, and that the time frame of Arafat's illness and death was consistent with poisoning from ingesting polonium. Palestinian ambassador to Russia, Fayyad Mustafa, was quoted by Novosti news agency as saying Thursday that the Palestinian authorities respect the Russian experts' conclusions, but consider it necessary to continue research into Arafat's death. Well, as you can see, there's a lot of contention on this topic. Who knows? It's one of these things we'll probably never know. Assassinations done in this way are done so that the evidence is not available. Mossad is expert at this type of assassination. So if they did do it, there will probably never be conclusive proof. But it was certainly very convenient that Arafat was removed, because Arafat was alerting the world to the connections between Israel and Hamas, to the fact that Israel was involved in staging terror attacks against their own people. And of course, Arafat was a nationalist. He championed the cause of a political solution, rather than an Islamic fundamentalist sort of caliphate type solution, which is now rampant in Syria and in Iraq and in Egypt. The secular approach, the approach that uses the basic mechanisms of self-determination and the principle of democracy and freedom and international law, is far more dangerous to empire building than extremist, fundamentalist nutcases. I mean, that's really what we're dealing with the people who are the extremist element within Hamas. I mean, some of them are out and out psychopaths. I think some of them are extremely sick people. And I think these type of people are more and more common in parts of the world that have been subject to such brutal occupations and such terrible treatment as the Palestinians have. It creates personality disorders, there's no doubt about it. I've read some books about some of the hostages who were kidnapped by Islamists back in the 80s, and it's well worth reading some of those accounts, because the people who were involved in those abductions, I'm talking about several Europeans, Irish, I believe a Canadian, were held for years. One of them was held for 5 years. I think another one was held for 10 years. And the groups that were doing it, they were really mixed up people. Some of them were sadistic. Some of them were people who were not of sound mind. Let's just put it that way. And of course, those people are in turn manipulated and controlled. And there's a parallel here between the people who were used by the US, the US Defense Forces, who were set up to torture people in Abu Ghraib and in Bagram Air Force Base and in Guantanamo Bay. Again, these people, victims of a brutal system, then given some power. And when I say victims, I mean the soldiers, I mean the people within the armed forces who've been acting at the behest of US empire building, where they've been encouraged to engage in criminal acts. And so their moral compass has been destroyed. These people are then put in charge of prisons. And then with a nudge and a wink, they're told, you can use enhanced interrogation tactics, because that's what Donald Rumsfeld said, we're going to allow enhanced interrogation tactics. And of course, what do? They ended up terrorizing people, they ended up committing horrendous crimes, which are still being covered up to this day. Same phenomenon. Same type of problem. It's just you're seeing it in a different context. Okay, we're almost at the end of the hour. There's one more topic I want to cover, and this is back really on the subject of the deceptions of Israel. The way in which the entire theatre of that conflict is a theatre. It is actually fictional. I want to talk about the much vaunted Iron Dome protection system that Israel claims has prevented so many people dying from the evil rockets of Hamas. I've got an article here with a quote from Brigadier General Daniel Gold. And this is dated the 13th of July 2014. Says here, Israel Defense Prize winner and aerospace engineering expert Dr. Moti Sheffer stated that Iron Dome was one of the biggest bluffs ever seen. He said, there is no missile in the world today able to intercept missiles or rockets. Iron Dome is a sound and light show that is intercepting only Israeli public opinion, and itself, of course. Actually, all the explosions you see in the sky are self-explosions. No Iron Dome missile has ever collided with a single rocket. Open spaces are a myth invented in order to up Iron Dome's current interception percentages. The rockets announced as intercepted by Iron Dome either never reach the ground or are virtual rockets invented and destroyed on the Iron Dome control computer. To this day, no one has ever seen an intercepted rocket fall to the ground. He continued, what lands here is what's launched. The parts we see on the ground are from Iron Dome itself. We're shooting at ourselves, mainly virtually. The virtual rocket was invented in order to increase the vagueness surrounding Iron Dome. Assume that a real rocket arrives. What does the command and control system do? It creates 9 more virtual rockets and transmits their paths on computer graphics to the rocket launcher operators. The launcher operators see 10 rockets and launch 10 Iron Dome interceptors. People hear 10 booms. One rocket enters, and you get a 90% success rate. According to Dr. Schieffer, Iron Dome is part of a broad conspiracy in which two interested parties afraid of peace are participating, the defense industries and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Brigadier General Daniel Gold, who initiated Iron Dome, responded scornfully, I won't make personal remarks here. Let him believe whatever he wants to believe. Anyone can see what the truth is. Well, there are a number of other articles on this topic, folks, which I will post on the website. Several experts have come forward. Not all are saying in such an extreme way as this one, but all concur that the Iron Dome does not really prevent deaths. Of course, as we know, most of the rockets don't have warheads anyway. The only way you can prevent a warhead detonating is to hit it head-on, and Iron Dome, in most cases, is not able to do that. We're going to break. We'll be back after the break with Max Egan for the whole hour to talk about Gaza and his experiences. It's going to be a really interesting discussion, so I'll be looking forward to seeing you on the other side.